The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. Yeah, yeah, Mr. Stu.
Hey, if you think hearing these voices is great on your head,
wait until you see our fat bodies.
Wow, you're gonna love the tour.
Oh, it's great.
See us in our complete mess of physique.
Yes.
Out at how many places? We have four this week.
We are going to Richmond, Virginia on Thursday, and we're still looking for the best, like, greasy dive to eat at. Then we're going to Hershey, Pennsylvania on Friday, Pittsburgh on Saturday, and on Sunday is Cleveland, Ohio.
It's pretty cool. It's going to be a lot of fun. We haven't been on tour for a while. If you want to come,
long time.
You should. Don't be a communist.
That's what you are.
Antifa member.
You're a racist, bigot, communist, homophobe, xenophobe.
This works so well for CNN. I'm going to try it. come to the tour. GlennBeck.com/tour is the place to go to get tickets.
And we'll see you this week if you're in any of those areas. Come and see us. All right. On the podcast, we go over the election numbers, and things are not going too well.
Well, it's mixed. This is going to be an interesting one to watch. We're a week away from our election coverage, by the way, in the Blaze. If you are a subscriber, you can be able to check that out. I think it's going to be in a lot of places anyway, but we would encourage you to check out the coverage. I know the full coverage will be on theblaze.com/TV for subscribers. But going through all of the numbers and seeing, you know, where does Senate land? Where does the House land? Also some interesting numbers today from individual issues from among independents.
Really fascinating to look at what the independents are thinking, because you have to compare and contrast several different questions, and you start to see how America in the middle is shaping up. Also, the lessons from one of my staff members, one of my producers on the show, whose family is down in Mexico Beach, Florida. He just came back last week after trying to put their life back together, and I want to share the lessons that I learned from him all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Tuesday, October 30th. Glenn Beck.
All right, let's talk about the border here for a second. The wall, it's coming up, kind of, sort of. 5,000 active duty military have been called to the southwest border. 5,000 military personnel. They're coming in waves with 800 that are on the way right now. The emergency deployment will join over 2,000 National Guard troops that are already on the ground. On top of that, there's another 7,000 troops that have been put on 24-hour emergency standby. That is remarkable. We're talking 14,000 troops on our southern border. Now, you can look at this one of two ways. If you're on the left, you can say this is just Donald Trump posturing, and there is no, well, you know what? If you're on the left, let me just play the left's own Shep Smith. This is what Shep Smith said yesterday about the border.
Tomorrow, the migrants, according to Fox News reporting, are more than 2 months away, if any of them actually come here. But tomorrow is 1 week before the midterm election, which is what all of this is about. There is no invasion. No one's coming to get you. There's nothing at all to worry about. When they did this to us, got us all riled up in April, remember? The result was 14 arrests. We're America. We can handle it. But, like I said, a week to the election, and Jennifer Griffin's on it from the Pentagon.
Okay, so there's Fox News and Shepard Smith. Congratulations, Shepard Smith. And CNN is saying the same thing, so is MSNBC. And you know what? They have so much credibility, because I still have the same doctor, don't you? I still have the same doctor. In fact, I'm paying $2,500 less per year for my health insurance. How about you? You know, they have so much credibility because it was clearly racism when we said that socialism and socialists seemed to be crawling all over the Democratic Party and the Obama administration, and that they were fundamentally changing things. No, those were all conspiracy. You know, they were so right when they said there's a caliphate is a pipe dream. You were so right. Gee, I just don't understand why America doesn't take CNN, Shep Smith, MSNBC, the New York Times at face value. I just don't understand it. I mean, again, just this weekend, you're so right when you say that Donald Trump is responsible for the shootings in Pittsburgh. It's just, you know, when you hear stuff, you just know when it's true. Let's think this through fairly for a second. First of all, unusual situations call for emergency actions. Homeland Security has confirmed that the migrant caravan is still on the way, albeit slowly. It's about 4,000 strong. They also announced the existence of a second caravan now forming in Guatemala of another 3,000. Homeland Security and Defense Secretary Mattis are obviously treating this seriously, even though people like CNN are mocking those who call these an invasion. But what do you call a group of people, 2,000, 4,000, 7,000 strong, marching to a border, saying you're going to cross whether the country wants you or not, while carrying another country's flag? What do you call that? You know, the reason why you have to stop this if it's coming, the reason why you have to stop it is because if you don't stop this one, there will be an invasion because America can't control her own borders. Nearly 8,000 troops to match a 4,000-strong caravan. 14,000 if the second caravan links up with the first, swelling their numbers to 7,000. So any media magician trying to spin what this caravan really is, and I honestly don't know how you can describe a potential force of 7,000 people all approaching your border with the intent of getting through no matter what you say and carrying a foreign flag. I don't know what you call it besides an invasion. So is the Department of Defense justified? Well, the news media will say no. But what does America say? It is classic military-style doctrine preparing now for an unconventional attack on the country. This has not happened before. But I said I want to be fair here. Unexpected and irregular tactics call for emergency action, and I definitely feel safer knowing that men and women in green and blue are standing watch on the border. I don't know what you can expect. What should you do? Nothing? Nothing? If you had a group of people that were headed to your business or to your house, and they said, we're going to go into your house, whether you like it or not, and we've got 2,000 people here, and you're not going to be able to stop us because what's in your house, we want. We're just going to live there. Now, if you had a group of people that were marching, saying that, coming to your house, would you want the police to do nothing? Would you think that, would you be happy if the police all of a sudden just said, you know what, they're not coming for you? No, here they are. They're on the road. They're on the road. There they are. There's the video. There's the video of them saying they're going to come into my house and live in my house. Oh, please. I don't know about you, but the next time there was a campaign, I'd sure be running for sheriff. Local law enforcement protect our streets. The Border Patrol protects our borders. The new standard cannot be the military on our borders 100% of the time. Emergency situations always give birth to emergency changes, which always turn into permanent changes. The federal income tax, the Patriot Act are two examples of many. I don't like emergency measures. That's why we should have a border policy that allows immigrants to come in that are qualified. Come in through the front door and stops all of the side windows and the back door entries. The country needs either serious policy on the border that will stop this, or you need to build the damn wall. Because, quite frankly, the military on the border is not a good solution. But I'm sorry, CNN. I don't know what you want to call it. I mean, after all, you don't like to call Antifa when they're throwing Molotov cocktails. You don't even like to call them a mob. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the program, Pat. Big news of the day to you is?
I would say the possibility of the president issuing an executive order ending birthright citizenship.
Okay, problem. Mm.
Well,
problem.
It's an executive order I'd agree with, though. So,
so you're okay with it?
Yeah, whatever. That's how you judge it? Isn't that the justification?
Yeah, that is the justification.
I think what would happen is it would be challenged, and then it would go to the Supreme Court, which finally... Okay, force the Supreme Court to rule on that. The 14th Amendment is not about illegals coming here, dropping babies, and having them be citizens.
No,
that's not what it's about.
No, this was clearly, again, I said yesterday, everything after the 10th Amendment basically is a reiteration. It's just a reiteration. Oh, dear God, did you not get this? Mm-hmm. Yes, blacks, we mean black people too. Okay,
yeah,
that's
right.
The 13th Amendment. 14th Amendment is, oh, geez.
Okay, in the yes. South, stop it.
Yeah, literally, Democrats, mm-hmm. knock it off.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, their children are citizens, too.
Yeah.
That's what this was.
Right.
This was not about coming over here and having a baby and then, you know, sneaking in, crossing, having a baby, and then being able to bring all your family here.
Ludicrous.
Is that what that was?
Mm-mm. And so it's been misinterpreted now all this time.
Right, but you can't use an executive order.
He shouldn't do it with an executive order.
No, but if he's doing it with an executive order so it's challenged and it goes right directly to the Supreme Court, I'm kind of okay with that.
Yeah, and I think that's what would happen.
Yeah.
Because they will challenge it.
They will challenge it, and I hope that there's a way to challenge it more than just because I think... No, the president can't issue an executive order that goes against the Constitution. But I would like more than that. I would like them to rule on what the 14th Amendment actually means.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be a disagreement among even like originalists with the Constitution as to what it actually means or whether that's included. And it'll be interesting.
Weirdly,
to see,
there is. Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see like how that shakes out, because, you know, one of the things we've praised Trump about relatively endlessly is the job he's done with the courts. So these are the judges he's put in would now rule on this. And with there being some level of debate, even among originalists, whether this would be allowed or not, it was just going to be fascinating to watch,
imagine,
if it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Imagine Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi writing up that brief as a friend of the court to come in and say, no, Judge Kavanaugh, we really believe this. That guy has got to be a Superman to not at least think, oh really? I mean, you could come with a Pittsburgh shooter and be like, and say, no, really, he did it. He's really, really bad. You know, we need to incarcerate him. Not even death penalty. We need to incarcerate him. And you know, there's got to be a part of him that just goes, oh, that's what you want?
Speaking of which, it's interesting to see everybody bending over backwards in the mainstream media and a lot of the Democrat leadership trying to pin the Pittsburgh shooting on Trump. The most pro-Israel, pro-Jewish president we've ever had in the history of this country. And he's responsible for this? It's pretty amazing.
It is. You know what? Can we play just a couple of things? Listen to this. This is how far they have gone. Here's Joe Scarborough and what he had to say. Listen to this.
Nika, you know, in a week, people get to make a decision. Is this the America they want to live in? Because right now, the only constitutional check against this sort of abhorrent behavior, again, a guy who was sending a message by time and time again, tweeting about baseball or talking about his bad hair day there, that was done intentionally.
What?
To send a message to white nationalists. This doesn't bug me that much. Listen, I'm going to watch a baseball game. I'm going to tweet about baseball.
It's a World Series.
I'm not going to let it occupy my day.
This is how twisted they have become.
Yeah.
It's how twisted they have become.
Well, and that's from a hardcore conservative.
Yeah, Joe Scarborough.
Nobody's more conservative than Joe.
No, of course not.
I mean, not at least not at that desk.
And a good friend. And a good friend. He and Mika, good friends.
All good friends.
Good friends, good buddies.
No. They watched a lot of the debates together.
Oh, that's nice.
Good friends.
Joe and Mika did? Mm-hmm. With the president?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they did, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's turned
CNN, over and over and over again, are trying to get any Jewish person to say, oh, yeah, this is Donald Trump's fault. I heard the rabbi of the synagogue.
Yeah. Oh, Allison Camerota tried desperately to get him to say it was Trump's fault. He wouldn't do it.
Right.
You know, to his credit, he would not do it.
They tried it with Joe Lieberman.
They tried it with Ambassador Dermer from Israel. He wouldn't do it. And it turned on them. These people were like, no, that's not Trump's fault. It's not Trump's fault.
And for them to, now they're starting to make all criticism of anybody who's Jewish or who's ever known a Jewish person or who's ever driven by a synagogue, if you criticize that person, it's anti-Semitic. What are you talking about?
That is true. I mean, that was that Julia, what is it, Ioffe, or whoever she is?
Yeah,
from GQ.
It's anti-Semitic to criticize George Soros.
That's what she said about Glenn. In fact, she had a little issue yesterday as well on CNN. GQ columnist talking about Trump radicalizing. Listen to this.
Now, this president, one of the things that he really launched his presidential run on is talking about Islamic radicalization. And this president has radicalized so many more people than ISIS ever did. I mean, the way he talks, the way he talks, the way he allows these people, the way he winks and nods to these groups, the way he says, I know I'm not supposed to say it, but I'm a nationalist, gritting his teeth, kind of says, fine, okay, I condemn this, but then, you know, and
Jake,
all his...
for you not to push back on that...
You're about to push back on, but to
that's
bring...
irresponsible.
But bring,
for her to say that the President of the United States has radicalized more people than ISIS is irresponsible.
Okay, stop. Mm-hmm. You notice
beyond
the guest was not just saying that to him, to her. The guest was saying it to the host.
Yeah.
For you not to push back on that is irresponsible. He's not talking about her being irresponsible. Yeah. He's talking about CNN being irresponsible.
And one thing to notice in that clip, she says one of the things that the president ran on, it was fighting Islamic extremism. And now we know that he has radicalized more people than ISIS. There's a setup line to that. So not only is it a catchy little thing that might get her in the news, it's also there's a setup line to it. To me... obviously a planned line. Obviously she meant to go on television and say just that. She set it up out of, it didn't make any sense in the context of the conversation. She wanted to get to that line.
Right. And she's totally under control.
Mm-hmm.
She's dispassionate about it.
Yep.
She's just having a conversation.
Yes. So here is her apology when she realizes how bad that was a few minutes later.
I think I spoke in the heat of the moment. This has been a very emotional and personally painful time for me.
Right.
I think I exaggerated and I apologize for that. But the point I was trying ham-fistedly to make is that it's not a coincidence that according to the ADL, the number of anti-Semitic attacks has jumped by nearly 60% in the first year that Donald Trump was in office. And it's no coincidence because even though the main danger is homegrown right-wing extremists, as many studies have pointed out, this administration has methodically shifted resources away from monitoring those people, away from trying to control those people and keep them from committing violence.
That's not an apology at all. Not an apology at all. She further inflames
what she was saying.
Mm-hmm. And there's no pushback from CNN.
No, they don't care. I mean, it's great for them. They like it.
Yeah.
Because they believe it.
They do.
They believe it. I've never been this disconnected from the media ever. And that we've been disconnected from the media a long time.
Yeah.
This is like they are broadcasting to an alternate reality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't even know how they see these things.
Well,
I
mean, as an anti-Semite, that's what you expect Glenn to say, right?
I mean, I forgot. This same person said that I was an anti-Semite.
She did. And yeah. We looked back to see if we could find the evidence of it. And you do talk about the Jews a lot.
He's
obsessed with them. Let's be honest about it. Glenn Beck is obsessed with the Jews. I think we can all come together on that point. I mean, listen to how many times he talks about them. Listen to this.
Israel exists because they have a right to live.
The same hatred is emerging. From the shadows, it is coming out again. And once again, the fingers are beginning to point to Israel, to the Jew. And again, for some reason, even here in America, we are turning a blind eye. This time, there is no excuse.
Stand with Israel. We will stand for the truth. Hmm. We will stand for freedom and decency. We will stand for life. We are with you. You're not alone.
A message to Israel. Israel, hear me clearly. Here's what I can offer. My prayers and my support. And I wish my country would support you. We support your right to exist. We support your right as a Jew to live.
I've told you, as Israel goes, so goes the Western world. They are the keystone to freedom in the Middle East. If they fall, we all fall.
In Israel, you see courage. In Israel, there is more courage in one small square mile than in all of Europe.
I stand tonight with Israel.
The nation of Israel and its capital of Jerusalem lives forever.
It is truly an honor to be here, and I am a proud Zionist. I am proud to be with you.
Glenn, on a personal note, it's been amazing the friendship that we've had. And really, it's been just amazing getting a chance to sit and to study with you. And we really want to thank you for everything that you do. Thank you so much.
Receiving one of those Defender of Israel awards. And you've been, I mean...
You're right, Stu. We talked about him a lot.
Talks about him a lot.
He's obsessed.
You know, it's a dog whistle.
Yeah.
It's a dog whistle.
Yep.
When I say, we stand with Israel,
it means you
eternal
want them
capital,
gone.
It means, you know, gas them. It's got to mean that. I mean, it's a dog whistle. Oh, we all know it.
Man. And with the exception of your weight, you've been very consistent on those comments.
Shut up.
I mean, it's one of the more bizarre attacks. And it's the
incredible
idea. Pat brought this up when we were off the air a minute ago. Is every criticism of Glenn Beck a criticism of the Mormon Church?
Yeah. Right?
Is that what they're doing? They're attacking Mormons.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how idiotic that point is. You can be critical of the top progressive financier as a conservative without hating Jews. It's got nothing to do
especially
with him being a Jew.
Since George Soros is an atheist.
He doesn't identify as Jewish.
Hello.
I mean, it is absolutely incredible. First of all, the number one person on the death list for Jews, you know, the most targeted Jew in America is
Ben Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Ben Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Trump people love Ben Shapiro.
I mean, most conservatives do.
Right. Conservatives love Ben Shapiro. We don't like George Soros. So how do you weigh that one?
It's policy-based.
It is.
It's policy-based.
And they know it. They know it.
Of course they do.
They're doing the same thing as they were doing with Barack Obama when you said, wait a minute.
He's a socialist.
He's a socialist. You're a racist for saying that.
Yeah.
Don't let this work.
Doesn't make any sense.
Does not even warrant a response, or at least a serious response.
Mm-hmm.
They have become a joke and have become everything they said they despised.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
I want to introduce you to a guy who, you want to talk about a guy who's going to be able to last in the next phase where we're all having to change jobs every 5 years. So this guy, Patrick Carelci, he is a former applied physicist, a marketer, and a writer. I don't know how those things go hand in hand, but he was sponsored by Andrew Breitbart for a Pulitzer, and I remember these op-eds, Obama's politicization of the National Endowment for the Arts. Do you remember when he was doing that? This is the guy who exposed that. He also forced the resignation of an Obama appointee, led to the creation of new White House-issued ethics guidelines, revealed, do you remember this one? Revealed the Obama initiative to influence scripted TV content. That's this guy. He has a new podcast out that I highly, highly recommend. I listen to lots and lots of talent and lots of podcasts. Patrick's podcast, I absolutely love. I can't remember exactly the phrase, but he said at some point, I'm a storyteller. These are stories. And he tells what's happening through great, great storytelling, which is a lost art. Welcome to the program, Patrick Carelci.
You got it right, Glenn. You got my last name right. Thank you so much.
You need to change it because it's spelled ridiculously. And anyway, Patrick, your podcast is Red Pilled America. Can you just go over the first episode? It's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, the first episode, I basically kind of show Hollywood's hypocrisy through a story that I, through an incident that I experienced with some of Hollywood's biggest players, where we basically called out this man for getting in bed with other people's kids. And he was able to turn it around merely by saying that we were conservatives. And the entire community basically sided with this man because of that. So I go through and kind of give an insider's look at Hollywood through the lens of this story and kind of analyze their opinions towards the right and kind of come out of it. And it basically led to the podcast that I learned through this story that basically the left and Hollywood are never going to allow conservatives in, and we're never going to allow us to tell our stories. And so it just kind of it bled right into this, into the creation of this podcast.
Well, it's rare to hear a good storyteller. It's I mean, honestly, Patrick, if you just stumbled onto this, you might think, because of the production value and the writing and the way you've done it, it sounds like something the left would produce. Which is fantastic. Thank you.
I mean, it's such an important human form of communication, and you are obviously. I've heard you speak, and you understand the power of storytelling, but it's something that the right has never really embraced.
No, we don't do it well.
No. So it's something we need to do.
So take the audience through a bit. What did you learn from that? Because I think this is the same thing that's happening when we said Barack Obama is surrounded by socialists. Look at the cover of what was it? Newsweek magazine said we're all socialists now. And as soon as we said you're going for socialism, they immediately said we're racist. Now, when you point out George Soros this week, the media is trying to say anybody who disagrees with George Soros is an anti-Semite. That's kind of the same thing that you found in Hollywood with your case, is it not?
I did. And they basically have taken the position that anybody that is a Republican or conservative is racist, is anti-Semite, is homophobic. And it's just their way of kind of othering us. I mean, I'm American of Mexican descent. And so my wife is Mexican. She's a first generation, a Mexican American. They use this identity politics to other us, and then they completely ostracize, and it's an attack mode. And it's something that it goes into understanding why Hollywood is so ubiquitously left-leaning. And, you know, you see why all these stories that come out of Hollywood that are so one-sided, that only tell one side of the story. So, you know, that is when I saw this, I said, you know what, we need to start telling our side of the story, and we need to use storytelling as a way to do that. So that's what I learned. It was an astonishing kind of moment to call out a man that is getting in bed with other people's kids, and to actually have the entire community turn on us purely because we were conservatives. It was an astonishing moment to go through.
What is it that they hate about conservatives more than pedophilia?
You know, I think it is a fear. Hollywood is such a small community, and it's run by so few people. And there's such a fear for losing work. And one way, and on top of that, it's like the Games of Thrones, where it's very competitive to get that work. So the first way to take somebody out is to say that they're conservative. And then anybody that is even near that person that gets a stink of them on conservative, that they're conservative, they run from that person. So there's a lot of it is the loudest voices basically first kind of point you out, like the invasion of the body snatchers, that this guy is the conservative. And then you have the second tier, which are just people that are fearful for getting work. And those people run as well. So it's just kind of this very unhealthy community that gets set up. And then, you know, and then you start to see what happens to the Hollywood box office. They start to, you know, slowly over the last 15 years start to decline because they aren't making content for the other half of the country. So, you know, I think that conservatives have really locked in on this and said, you know what, enough of this. We're not taking this anymore. You see the ratings start to go down. But now it's our time. Now there's this new frontier for conservatives where we need to start creating content for ourselves. And we need to start entertaining ourselves because they're never going to do it. And that's what we're trying to do with Red Pilled America. That's on the iHeartRadio podcast. iHeartRadio app.
We're talking to Patrick Carelci. And let me ask you, Patrick, I have this theory about what happened with Megyn Kelly, that the business people looked at Megyn Kelly and thought, wow, she's a great get. She's very credible. She's great in an interview. You know, we have our own kind of 60 Minutes kind of person. Very, very smart, yada, yada, yada. They hire her. And that's when the social justice warriors all around them remind them she's a conservative. She was a conservative on a conservative network. She was part of Fox. And no, you can't play nice, and you have to destroy her. And so they hired her for business reasons. And then as soon as they realized the social justice warriors were against it, they did what everybody else does, and they just immediately changed their tune and set out to destroy. Do you think there's any validity to that?
Oh, 100%. I mean, she didn't have an audience when she went there. She was walking into a completely different environment that she was used to. I also do think that her going after the network for their coverage of the Harvey Weinstein and the entire Me Too movement had a big part of that that a lot of people aren't touching on. It basically, she was, you know, pretty brave in doing that. I think, you know, from a career wise, it might have been not the smartest move to do.
Yet, here's a woman in the Me Too moment exposing the corporation for covering, and they don't like that. And where are all the social justice warriors on that one?
Exactly. And that's where you kind of see how the Me Too movement has become just a political weapon, because it was not, it's not being used in the way that it was got given birth to. And I think that is one of the main reasons why. And it didn't help that she was a conservative, and it was easy to get rid of her because of that. I think that's what happened in Hagen.
Patrick, we're talking to the host of Red Pilled America. You can hear it on the iHeartRadio app. Really good storyteller. I know you're going to be taking on a few issues, and I want to kind of go through a couple of them. First of all, the caravan that is coming up. There's today, the media, including Shep Smith, are saying there's nothing to worry about. This isn't an invasion. What are your thoughts on the caravan?
You know, I think that it is something that, for whatever reason, the last 10 years, the left has completely changed their tune on in regards to our borders and our open borders. I feel like it is. We actually do an episode that's coming up that looks at this kind of story of, you know, is there actually jobs Americans won't do? And we follow two construction workers that I don't want to give the, you know, the end away, but that completely disprove that that argument. And I think at the end of the day, there is a lot of people that in America that we've forgotten about that have lost their jobs to much cheaper labor that comes across the border. And I think that we're seeing this here. I think that this caravan, it is not for political refugee kind of status that these people are looking for. It's economic, and it's going to hurt the most vulnerable people in the United States.
Well,
and I think it's
what's causing the homeless crisis in Los Angeles. Is that fueled by any of this?
You know, that's a funny thing that you asked that. It does 100% fuel some of that, because a lot of these kinds of labor type jobs have been taken away. But another thing that is causing the homeless crisis in Los Angeles is that there is the drug epidemic. There's a thing called patient, and we actually have a story coming out on that, patient brokering, where people are using Obamacare to fly people out to Los Angeles to rehab centers. And then when they end up using them, using the health insurance up, they end up getting stuck here in Los Angeles. And there's been this huge surge of rehab tourism here in the Southern California area that has been that is being attributed to the homeless surge over the course of last, you know, basically follows the passing of Obamacare. And I've spoken to parents that have basically been through this, and they point directly to Obamacare as being part of the reason why their kids have gotten out here in Los Angeles and then end up getting stuck out here.
You're covering also one other story I want to cover with you. Why does the black community vote almost unanimously for Democrats?
You know, we're releasing two episodes on Thursday. So our podcast is launching this Thursday on iHeartRadio's app. And one of the episodes is on this question. And we speak to Candace Owens and Diamond and Silk, and we get their kind of opinion on why the black community has voted almost unanimously since at least the 90s or the 80s. And what we are told is that they've been conditioned their entire life to vote that way. And they've used the tool of racism and the claim of racism to kind of scare people. And there's no other community within the United States that votes 90% plus for one party.
Do you see a change coming in that? Do they?
They do. They do. I'm hopeful. I really feel like we will be able to tangibly see a better America when that happens. When you see 15, 20, 25% of the black community voting for Republicans, you're going to see a different America at that point.
Patrick Kurelci, so good to talk to you, and congratulations on the podcast. I think it's really, really dynamic, and you do a great job on it. Thank you so much. We'll talk again.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and don't forget, rate us on iTunes.
Okay, we all know about the fox in the chicken house, right? the sneaky fox that tricks everybody into believing that he's the best animal to protect the chickens, and then when everybody turns their back, he eats all the chickens. What a surprise! It's a fox! Right? That's what you're supposed to learn from it. In the wake of the terrible shooting in Pittsburgh at the Tree of Life Synagogue, the Women's March, which is an incredibly well-funded group for a grassroots campaign, came out in pearl-clutching support of the victims. Now, they didn't do this without a lot of underhanded digs towards the president and America with its ghastly xenophobia. Here's the official statement from the Women's March on Twitter. "Today we are turning our grief into action with Jewish action to send a clear message that these anti-Semitic and xenophobic attacks can never happen again. If you're not in D.C., tune in around 3 o'clock to our Facebook page and watch and share live stream." Oh, that's fantastic. It's fantastic. The only problem with this is, the Women's March. I mean, the three highest ranking members have kind of a history of being vehemently anti-Semitic. And above them all is Linda Sarsour, which is the one who just issued this. Sarsour's main concern is attacking America and destroying its Western values so that it can be more amenable to Islam. Sarsour, make no mistake about it, is full of hatred. Everything she says has been hateful. Anytime she has words of support for something, red flags should pop up. Earlier this month alone, Sarsour tweeted a vague threat to Senator Collins for voting to confirm Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. And her choice of language, as usual, was racist and bigoted while pretending to be virtuous. This is Linda Sarsour's tweet. "A white woman senator is talking about presumption of innocence that is never offered to black men in America. You are watching white supremacy live on the Senate floor." Really? What did that have to do with white supremacy? She called the democratic process white supremacy. And the black men? What does that have to do with Kavanaugh? That is not even part of the story. In the wake of the shooting in Pittsburgh, Sarsour's anti-Israel and sometimes anti-Semitic rhetoric has taken quite a turn. Suddenly, she's Judaism's biggest champion. Even Courtney Love, yes, Courtney Love, the one who married Kurt Cobain, she has even said, "Look, I gotta tell you, she's an anti-Semite." Her exact words were that Linda Sarsour is an anti-Semitic terrorist. Sarsour has repeatedly advocated for the boycott of Israel. She has long called for the dissolution of Israel. She is violently pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel. She has rarely shown support for Israel or the Jewish community. Yet now, all of a sudden, she has a change of heart. I shouldn't have to say what important political event is about to take place. But above all else, she is an extremist. Her loyalty to Islam demands that she put it before everything else. And within Islam and throughout the Quran, there is the doctrine of deception. Muslims are forbidden from mixing with people of other faiths, but they must do that because sometimes they have to convert and spread Islam. Hence the doctrine of deception, where lying is encouraged. The purpose of lying is to smooth over the differences or gain the upper hand over an enemy, I'm quoting, and to advance the cause of Islam, in some cases by gaining the trust of non-believers in order to draw out their vulnerability and defeat them, end quote. In the Quran, 3:54, Allah himself is described as, quote, "the best of deceivers." Man, that doesn't sound like God. Linda Sarsour is one of the best deceivers. She has stood hand in hand, arm in arm, with Louis Farrakhan. This kind of rhetoric from Louis Farrakhan has been going on forever, but it's Linda Sarsour that has brought it into the Democratic Party. She's the one where she brought all of the leadership to Louis Farrakhan's most anti-Semitic speech, at least the one he's given in the last, you know, 6 months. It's hard to keep up because I think he just called Jews termites. So make no mistake, Linda Sarsour has a very different view of America, of American principles, of anti-Semitism. She is a sharp-minded fox guarding the chicken coop.
It's Tuesday, October 30th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. This next segment, I am merely doing for the mainstream media to see if they can figure out at all why America doesn't trust them. How are they playing any role in what's happening? The mainstream media, and this is why they are dangerous. Right now, they are dangerous. And they're not dangerous in the same way. They're an enemy. No. They're dangerous. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt in their blindness. Whether that is an intentional blindness, which I think it is, or just because they're just in this bubble and they don't know anybody who thinks differently. But their blindness is leading us to some very bad things. Donald Trump is not the problem. Donald Trump is a symptom, and he is a symptom of people who feel that they haven't been listened to, and they have been screwed by people in Washington and lied to by people in Washington and the media. I could give you a million examples. Let's say your health care is going to go down $2,500. Did it? Anybody? Bueller. Did your health care go down? No. How about that you can keep your doctor? How about that they weren't socialists and that if you said somebody was a socialist, you're a racist? How about the Tea Party was violent? And that Occupy Wall Street, who were actually planting bombs in Cleveland to blow up a bridge, stopped by the FBI, that they weren't? That you can't call a bunch of people clad in black masks, throwing Molotov cocktails and breaking storefront windows, you cannot call them a mob? I don't know. People feel that they have been lied to. And when they feel that they have been lied to, and on top of being lied to, they feel that they have been singled out as the problem, they don't take kindly to it. Now, right now, the media is all about Donald Trump's rhetoric. Now, I want you to listen. Now, this is Brian Stelter's stupid newsletter thing that goes out every night. And he's supposed to be the check on the press. Listen to this. The key message in President Trump's midterm playbook, hate the media, fear the migrant caravan, save me from a Democratic oversight. He's trying to stay on message despite the Pittsburgh massacre and the fallout from the wave of mail bombs. That means he's bashing the fake news while newsrooms are on a heightened state of security alert. They didn't seem to care about that with me when they were attacking me and my family was under attack. That means he's talking about a migrant invasion at the southern border while authorities examine the Pittsburgh shooter's hatred of invaders and Jews. He's scheduled to travel to Pittsburgh on Tuesday, even though the mayor has urged him to postpone his visit. It's likely to be a very big story on Tuesday. There was a White House scolding. Sarah Sanders surprised the press corps by scheduling a rare White House briefing on Monday. At the briefing, Sanders claimed that CNN rushed to blame the president for the pipe bombs. CNN PR responded, "No, press secretary, CNN did not say the real Donald Trump was directly responsible for the bombs sent to our office by his ardent and emboldened supporter. We did say that he and you should understand that your words matter, every single one of them. But so far, you don't seem to get that." Bloomberg, Trump is inciting people. The president should be unifying, and instead he's exciting people and inciting people, said Michael Bloomberg to CNN in an exclusive interview on Monday. On October 21st, the Pittsburgh suspect wrote on Gab, "I have noticed a change in people saying illegals. They're now saying invaders. I like this." His social media footprint showed how hatred of Jews merged with a hatred of immigrant invaders. We may never know where he heard this hateful language, but right-wing TV and radio has been saturated with invasion and invaders talk for the last 2 weeks. Websites and social media feeds have been spreading conspiracy theories about Jews helping the caravan. So I do hope there's some soul-searching, even belatedly, about this dehumanizing content and coverage. First key point, Fox hosts, Fox guests, GOP leaders are all talking about an imminent invasion, even though no such thing is happening. On Fox, I counted more than 60 invasion references since October 16th. Invading was brought up more than a dozen times. On Fox Business, I counted more than 75 invasion references, mostly on Lou Dobbs' show. By the way, this data includes repeats. But now Trump is using this word. The president apparently isn't second-guessing himself. On Monday, he used the word invasion for the first time in a tweet. But many Americans, perhaps most, are looking at Trump's decision to send 5,200 troops to the border as a stunt or political theater. On MSNBC's All In, Michelle Goldberg, she said, quote, "Trump has not only created this big lie about this caravan that has inspired mass murder, but he's now shifting the resources of government to substantiate his lie." At the same time on Fox, Tucker Carlson reassured his viewers that migrant caravan is a real thing. But what do you do with invaders? Oliver Darcy emails, "I think the natural question to ask is, what do you do with invaders? This rhetoric from Fox is particularly charged because of what it tells the Fox audience. One doesn't let invaders into their home. When faced with invaders, one generally uses everything at their disposal to confront them, including force. And that's the message that Fox is relaying to millions of people," end quote. Shep speaks the truth. Quote, "There is no invasion. No one is coming to get you," Shep Smith said on Monday. "There is nothing at all to worry about. The caravan is only talk about the midterms." That is the fair and balanced, reliable source critiquing what's happening in the media. Well, you know, it's weird. Is I didn't hear any critique if you happen to disagree with them. I heard if you happen to agree with them. I heard all kinds of stuff if you disagreed.
Yeah.
And lots of assumptions.
Well, and I don't know, just saying that Shep Smith tells the truth. How does Shep Smith know who's coming for you?
Yeah, or if they're even coming. Yeah,
right, or if they're even coming. I mean, like, you know what, the word imminent? I mean, is it a risk? I mean, we know this. Barack Obama went through a situation where thousands of unaccompanied minors were coming to the border.
And these were not 25-year-old children or 25-year-old adults, largely, mm-hmm. like the caravan mm-hmm. it seems mm-hmm. to be.
Mm-hmm.
That was a major situation. Now, he
wasn't prepared for it.
He wasn't prepared for it. And so they're being prepared for this one.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.